Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll get a first look at a new World War II documentary from Twin Cities Public Television, and we'll meet with two command sergeants major and see how they work together on behalf of the Minnesota National Guard. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
How can I make a difference in the life of a military family? That's the question that comes to us at the Minnesota National Guard a lot this time of year. People start their to-do lists for holiday gatherings, and many think of those who won't be together over the holidays due to the commitments in the military. How can I make a difference in the life of a military family? I'd like to answer that question today. Go to beyondtheyellowribbon.org and click on the Make a Difference button to get started. One of the easiest ways to support military families is by becoming active in your own community. Join a Yellow Ribbon Network. You may not know if your community has an established Yellow Ribbon Network. In that case, contact your local Family Assistance Center. You may want to make a difference by donating to an already established organization here in Minnesota. There are dozens of such organizations that always support our military families that are looking for financial support. Another option is volunteering to assist a family. In addition to connecting with a family through your local Yellow Ribbon Network, you can register on the Military Family Care Initiative website. This site, first developed by Mrs. Mary Pawlenty, allows groups and businesses to register, volunteer services, and discounts. Learn more about the ways that you can make a difference in a life of a family this holiday season by going to beyondtheyellowribbon.org and clicking on the Make a Difference button.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. May 2014, Twin Cities Public Television accompanied a small contingent of soldiers from the 34th Infantry Division on a tour of sites significant to the Red Bulls' battles in World War II in Italy. May marked the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Rome. Joining us now to talk about this documentary through a soldier's eyes is Luke Heikkila. Luke, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tom. I appreciate it.
Luke, every time we have you back, you've been somewhere pretty interesting, but this time at least you didn't have to bring your battle rattle, did you?
No, this trip was a whole lot safer than past trips. As you mentioned, in 2009, I embedded with the 34th Infantry in Basra, Iraq, and in 2012, I headed to Afghanistan to be with the Agribusiness Development Team. So when this opportunity in May came up to accompany a select few soldiers to Italy, I jumped at the chance.
And, of course, World War II, our own Minnesota National Guard Red Bulls was the longest-serving combat unit in World War II, and they fought their way through Africa and Italy. And when they were towards the end of that campaign and just before the invasion of France, they occupied 18 German divisions, and which were not otherwise available to go to Normandy and cause trouble for our invasion of that thing. And you have a guest with you today that went with you on the trip.
Yeah, I'm glad to have Sergeant Dylan Jennings with me. Dylan accompanied us on this trip, and it's really, I was able to tell his story. He's got a fascinating personal connection to the 34th during World War II. And rather than me talk about that, you know, I guess I would like to open that up to Dylan. Sorry to take your thunder, but, you know, if Dylan could talk a little bit about his personal connection to the 34th and what happened in World War II.
Staff Sergeant Jennings, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks. Good to be here.
How long have you been in the Minnesota National Guard?
12 years now.
And you've got a connection going all the way back to World War II, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been in the Guard for 12 years. I'm infantry. And my first deployment, I've had about 3 years worth of on two deployments. My first deployment was the longest single deployment in Minnesota Guard history in Iraq. Or in the Iraq War, and my great-grandfather was in the 133rd Infantry Battalion in the 34th Infantry Division, which was, like you said, the longest deployment in World War II. So, yes, great connection there.
So he fought his way all the way across Italy.
And Africa.
And Africa. He was there for the whole campaign.
The whole campaign, yep.
And you remember your great-grandfather?
I do. He died when I was very young, but I do remember him, yeah.
Now, when did you find out that you had an opportunity to go to Italy, particularly with Major General Lloyd Holt and some 34th Infantry Division folks and see some of the places that they fought across Italy.
Well, it was about a month or two before they had asked us if anybody in our unit had any connection with the 34th Infantry Division in World War II, and I said yes, and I didn't hear anything for a while, and then they said, well, we'd like you to go down to division headquarters and interview to possibly go to Italy. I said, well, that's perfect. I'll go. Absolutely. So I met with Luke and had a screen test and explained my connection, and the rest is history.
Screen test, Luke. Did you make him shave?
You know, he was clean shaven the first time I met him because he was. I think he'd just come down from Camp Ripley. He took like an all-night bus to be able to get to Rosemont for this, fancy term of a screen test. This is essentially just me asking a few questions while I'm rolling a camera on him. But yeah, he was clean shaven.
Luke, tell us, how did this whole trip come together, and who all did you bring?
Well, actually, it was your very own Sergeant Ben who gave me a call one day, and he said, have you ever been to Italy? And I had been to Italy, but that wasn't really the point of the phone call. He had, the division, the 34th Infantry, was planning a tour for, some of their leaders to be able to, commemorate what took place during World War II. And Ben's question to me was, wouldn't it be great if TPT was able to document that trip? And I, of course, agreed with him, and we did some fundraising, and the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs stepped up and helped us with the fundraising. And videographer Tom Adair and I and General Lloyd Holt and Dylan and Major Janish, we went to Italy, and we saw some pretty fascinating sites, some very important battle sites, the Volturno River, Hill 810, the Abbey at Monte Cassino. We were really able to, walk the steps that Red Bull soldiers took 70 years prior.
We're speaking with Luke Heikkilä and Staff Sergeant Dylan Jennings on Minnesota Military Radio about a new documentary on Twin Cities Public Television called Through a Soldier's Eyes. So, Sergeant Jennings, did you have to do a little research, a little homework, a little background check on the 34th Infantry Division and everything that your great-grandfather went through?
I did. Actually, there's a very good complete list of the history of the 34th, and even specifically my great-grandfather's battalion, date to date all the way through the war, and it was actually kind of cool to walk through those steps with my grandfather as I was reading it.
So this was a 5-day trip to Italy, was it?
5-day trip, yes.
And how many cities did you get to go through?
Oh boy, about a handful.
Quite a few.
Yeah, Prato, Florence,
Verneo.
Verneo. Yeah, we're at a loss. Yeah, the trip was a good 5-6 months ago now. It's sort of a breakneck pace. It was a bit of a sprint through some of these hill towns of Tuscany. Time was of the essence, but we had a great time. As a documentary team, Tom and I were really treated well, and we spent a lot of time with Dylan. We spent a lot of time with General Lloyd Holt. Gracious hosts, we were able to put together quite a story because of how well Dylan and General Lloyd Holt did do. There's no narration in this finished documentary. It's really through Dylan's perspective, through General Lloyd Holt's perspective of what they were seeing as they were seeing it. As they would survey a valley, they would try to imagine having to order soldiers to take a hill or having to, be on that hill themselves and what it must have been like 70 years ago in the rain, in the mud.
Were there actually some commemorative ceremonies that you went to on the trip as well?
Well, yeah, maybe I'll let Dylan speak to that. There were a number of ceremonies.
Yeah, I was actually able to be the color guard at not only our ceremonies, but several international ceremonies, which was a great honor. Absolutely.
And how did you find the people of Italy?
They were probably the most welcoming people I've met my entire life.
And were they excited about seeing some Americans back after 70 years after the war?
Absolutely. It's amazing. Even the young people know all about the war, and their family has been filling them in along the way, so...
Did you see still some signs of some damage from the war, or is that pretty well cured?
Absolutely, yeah. We saw quite a bit.
All right, Luke, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to get into some detail about some of the things you've seen and a couple of stories that Staff Sergeant Jennings has about his grandfather and some of the sights that they were able to see when you're over there. We're speaking with Luke Heikkila and Staff Sergeant Dylan Jennings about the documentary Through a Soldier's Eyes that'll be on TPT soon. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been joined today by Luke Heikkila from Twin Cities Public Television and Staff Sergeant Dylan Jennings from the Minnesota National Guard. And we're talking about a new World War II documentary called Through a Soldier's Eyes. And Luke, when are we going to be able to see this?
Well, your listeners in the Twin Cities will be able to see it on TPT2, Channel 2, at 9 p.m. on Friday, November 7th. For your listeners in greater Minnesota, it will be online at veterans.tpt.org.
And Sergeant Ben will have information on where they can find the show on the Minnesota Military Radio Facebook page. And Luke, if I recall, this is going to be aired several times, more than just once.
Yeah, I took a look at the advanced grid, and between November 7th and November 16th, it'll be broadcast 9 times on each of the three channels that Twin Cities Public Television programs. So listeners can throw Through a Soldier's Eyes into a Google bar or go to tpt.org and put Through a Soldier's Eyes into a search bar, and they will be able to find when it's being broadcast on a television set in their living room.
Very good. And Sergeant Jennings, I want to talk a little bit more about your great-grandfather. He was part of the effort. He was part of the our Red Bulls when they were storming across Italy, and you got to see some of the places he fought through.
Absolutely. You know, one of the more memorable moments of that trip was in a place called Hill 810. We took the Red Bull Highway up there and got out of our vehicles and started to climb the hill, and I think about 10 feet into the trail, I found a piece of shrapnel. And you know, it was absolutely amazing to think, you know, we fought back and forth for that hill, I think about 6 times, and gave it up to the Germans and took it back. And so it could have been American shrapnel. It could have been German shrapnel. You never know.
Yeah, 70 years ago.
70 years ago. It could have been anything. You know, so to pick that up 10 feet on the trail, you know, it tells you you're in a place where some real horrible stuff happened. I think we lost 90 Red Bulls on that hill.
Did you make it to the top?
We made it to the top. You know, they still have the fortified positions where the Germans had, you know, dug in to protect their equipment from mortaring. And at the top, you look out and you could see Florence from there. There you could see so much that it was obvious that, you know, any movement that 34th was making up towards those hills could have been watched for days by the Germans.
So from that high ground, imagine what it'd feel like to be the Germans seeing the American soldiers coming at them for days or longer.
I imagine it made it very easy to make good effect on contact. That's unfortunate, yeah.
What do you think your great-grandfather was thinking when he had to fight his way up that hill?
I imagine he was probably scared out of his mind, but, you know, those are some tough guys.
Now, I understand that one day on this trip that you met an Italian woman that had some experience with our Red Bull soldiers 70 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. After that, after we got down from Hill 810, we went and ate lunch with the Apennine soldiers. And I was told that, hey, there's a lady here who'd like to meet you. And up at the front was General Lloydalt was standing there with this, you know, older Italian lady. And our guide was giving, you know, basically translating what she was saying. And she had said that she had waited 70 years to thank an American soldier or an American for, you know, saving her life 70 years ago. When she was 14, she was trying to escape the fighting in the area with her sister. They were walking through the woods. They had no food, no water. They lost their shoes, and they'd come across a couple of GIs on a Jeep, and they had stopped and gave them, you know, rations and provisions and gave them a kiss and wished them well and drove off. And she said, if it wasn't for them, they would have died. So it was, you know, to have her just show up there was absolutely amazing. I'll remember the rest of my life.
Luke, there's an 84-year-old Italian lady that heard there were some American soldiers in town.
You know, and that is, you know, that's just, you know, good fortune. As a filmmaker, I couldn't have planned for a scene like that. I couldn't have written about that. I couldn't, you know, you can try to read about it, but when you see it happen firsthand right in front of you, you know, I guess the hair standing on my arms just thinking about it. I mean, it's one of those moments where you realize that, you know, humanity is good, you know, and in the depths of war, you know, some of the worst I cannot imagine what Elena, this 84-year-old woman, what she's experienced in her life. But for her to actively seek out this group of American soldiers, she just heard through the grapevine. She walked in and she was able to embrace Dylan. She was able to embrace General Leutold. She was able to say thank you and to be there with a camera, and then to be able to have Dylan and General Leutold, you know, tell that story to the camera. I mean, it's a very powerful piece of television, and I'm eager for people to see that.
Sergeant Jennings, just imagine one of those two GIs could have been your great-grandfather.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I had a Red Bull patch in my pocket, and I gave it to her, and her eyes just lit up. You could tell that she could recognize it. So that would have been Red Bull soldiers there that would have helped her.
You made her day, and she made yours, didn't she?
That's absolutely it, yeah.
We're speaking with Luke Heikkila and Staff Sergeant Dylan Jennings on Minnesota Military Radio about the documentary Through a Soldier's Eyes that'll be coming up on Twin Cities Public Television soon, and we'll give you those dates again before we're done. Sergeant Jennings, you also, along the way, visited some American cemeteries.
Yeah, absolutely. We visited the American Cemetery at Natuno, which houses 7,000 fallen soldiers, and it's in the middle of nowhere, basically, in Natuno. And if you didn't know it was there, you'd drive right by it. But it's absolutely immaculate. The way they're able to maintain that cemetery, it was amazing to me. So, we actually got a chance to lower the flag at the end of the day. As a soldier, that's an unbelievable honor.
That had been a moving moment for you.
Absolutely,
Luke. Have you ever seen anything like that?
I haven't. As I sit here, I can close my eyes and I can see. I've never seen greener grass. I've never seen more beautiful trees. And then to see the 7,000 plus grave sites, gravestones, white crosses, all in perfect formation, all arched at a perfect arc. For anyone who is making a trip to the Tuscany area, I would encourage them to seek out this cemetery. You'll have to rent a car to get there, but it's a life-changing event to be at an American cemetery on foreign land and realize, who is laying at your feet, who's buried in the ground here, and what their stories are. I mean, it's truly a chance of a lifetime to be able to experience an American cemetery overseas.
Luke, did it change your perspective on taking care of flags when you saw Sergeant Jennings?
Oh, my gosh. The whole trip, I was able to see Sergeant Jennings be a part of a color guard or hold the unit colors. And to see, he and the other soldiers bring down the flag that was flying over that American cemetery at the end of the day, it's astonishing to see the care that goes into doing something like that. I mentioned to my friends and family that never again, while I'm at a parade or a ball game, when I see the colors come in, I always stand, I always put my hand over my heart, take my hat off, like, good Americans should. But I now really have a deeper understanding for the significance of that ceremony.
Sergeant Jennings, what an honor to be able to go on a trip and see the ground that your great-grandfather covered and to go with the division commander. Did he enjoy himself?
Oh, absolutely. I learned a lot just being around him. He's a great historian, especially for the 34th. So just listening to his perspective along with understanding mine on the ground, looking at the same sites, it was very interesting.
When you guys said it was a busy trip, I was just imagining the two of you trotting to keep up with General Leutold.
Yeah, he's a busy guy.
He keeps moving, and I'm sure he knew the whole history of the trip over there, and must have been just a great event for you to go over with the division commander and see all of this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I've never felt closer to my great-grandfather since this trip. Most people, they have a connection with World War II because so many people fought back then, and you might have, some paperwork and a medal or something. But to be able to go over there and walk through their footsteps along the path that they took to take basically a country back was amazing.
Reading about it and studying is one thing, but walking the ground and seeing it's entirely another, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Luke, back to you. When is this going to air? Both, as you know, we've got our Minnesota Military Radio Network is 21 stations now, so we're heard here in the Twin Cities, but all over the state.
Yeah, here in the Twin Cities, your listeners can catch it at 9 p.m. on Friday, November 7th on TPT2. It'll also be broadcast across the state, and encourage your listeners to take a look in their local listings for Through a Soldier's Eyes. It's also going to live online at veterans.tpt.org.
Sergeant Jennings, just a few minutes, just a few seconds left. Any final thoughts about this trip and the documentary?
No, I hope that everybody gets a chance to watch it and really gets a good understanding of what the 34th did during World War II. And it was quite a lot, like you said, the longest single deployment, the most time in combat of any unit in World War II.
Sergeant Jennings, thanks for joining us today. Luke, final thoughts, just a couple seconds.
You know, I encourage people to seek it out. They will be able to experience the trip as Dylan and I did.
Gentlemen, thanks for joining us. That was Luke Heikkila and Staff Sergeant Dylan Jennings talking about Through a Soldier's Eyes, coming up on Twin Cities Public Television. In our next segment, we're going to talk about the Veterans Home in Hastings. And a little later, we're going to be joined by two Command Sergeants Majors. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to start talking about the Minnesota Veterans Home in Hastings. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelato.
The mission of the Minnesota Veterans Home is serving those who have served by providing quality health care in an environment of trust, dignity, and sharing. Our homes provide a safe and comfortable environment for veterans and their spouses to call home. Veterans homes are located across the state in 5 different locations: Minneapolis, Fergus Falls, Hastings, Laverne, and Silver Bay. Our vision is to continually develop and deliver a safe, dignified, and compassionate healthcare system while providing a nurturing and engaging home environment for Minnesota's heroes. We deliver personalized care according to the individual needs of each resident. Our facilities operate 24/7 to ensure the safety and comfort of our veterans. If you or a loved one are interested in applying to one of our veterans' homes, applications are available at minnesotaveteran.org. That's minnesotaveterans.org. At the Minnesota Veterans Home, every day is Veterans Day.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelato. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Joining me now is Andrew Burnside, the administrator from the Minnesota Veterans Home in Hastings. Andrew, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
Andrew, I understand you served some time in the military.
I did. I was in the Army in the 70s for about 3 years. I joined at the age of 17.
And how did you arrive as being administrator of the Minnesota Veterans Home in Hastings, and how long ago was that?
I have been at Hastings for about 2 years. I was administering long-term care up in northern Minnesota, up by Mille Lacs Lake, and had a desire to get closer to the cities. I saw the opportunity of working with veterans and having a lot of veterans in the family, my own son as well as siblings and myself. I was interested and applied for the position down in Hastings.
Well, let's go there. The Hastings Veterans Home. Tell us about it.
The Hastings Veterans Home is fairly unique. It's a board and care facility within the system. They're called domiciliaries. No one uses that term because no one understands what it means, but it's basically a board and care facility. It is not a skilled nursing facility. So our clientele, our residents there, tend to be younger, much more active. So our focus is somewhat different. We focus more on mental illness issues, alcohol and drug addiction issues, and the planning and therapy is different than a skilled facility.
So these are veterans who happen to live there?
That is correct. We house approximately 160 veterans. There is room for about 180. We do not have a waiting list at the Hastings Veterans Home that most of the long-term care facilities have. Also, we are one of only 5 in the U.S. that are strictly board and care facilities.
So some of your residents come and go then?
That is correct. For the most part, they come and go as they choose. Many of them drive and have vehicles there. Many of them are involved in education or employment opportunities as well.
Minnesota Veterans Home in Hastings is a board and care facility with about 160 veterans down there. And I understand that you're working on some unique things, like something called the bucket list.
That is correct. We do have some new initiatives. And how the bucket list started was we have a volunteer coordinator, the individual that deals with most of the auxiliary organizations, the American Legion, VFW, et cetera. And we had a veteran that was terminal living at the Hastings Veterans Home. And the volunteer coordinator was speaking with him and noticed that he was kind of down. And he asked them if there was anything the facility could do to put a smile on his face. And from that came the bucket list, which is kind of the same lines as the Make-A-Wish Foundation. If there is something, if we have a terminal veteran and there is something that we can do that they've always wanted to do, we try to accommodate that. And for this veteran, what he wanted to do was to spend a weekend up at Lake Superior and basically travel up the highway from Duluth and look at the scenery and go to some events in Duluth. And we were able to accommodate that for him through donations. All of the activities of that nature are done through donations.
So his one wish to make him happy was to go see the North Shore.
That's correct. That's correct. And the Holiday Inn in Duluth, they are the ones that donate the rooms. Also, grandmas donated meals at their restaurant. So it was all accomplished through donations.
Now, who goes out and gets the donations, Mr. Director?
For the most part, it is the volunteer coordinator. I get involved in some areas. We get funding from three different sources to run the home. However, anything beyond that has to be done through donations. So that is very active with the veterans' homes. Everything from the toothpaste they use to books for the library is accomplished through donations through organizations and individuals.
So you're networking with all the veteran service organizations and other people that are concerned and want to help veterans' bucket list for terminal patients is certainly compelling.
Correct, and absolutely. That I get involved on a daily basis in those activities.
So out of your 160 or so residents, you said the ages are usually younger than the other homes?
Correct. We have veterans in their 30s. We also have a veteran that's 99. So it does vary. Any veteran that does not require skilled nursing care would be eligible to come to our facility.
How come you don't have a waiting list and you've got 20 rooms open? What's going on down there?
Board and care is a different level of care. We would not qualify as a skilled nursing facility. And board and care is typically for those veterans that have a specific area of need and the numbers just aren't there, that they aren't as tied to aging as the skilled facilities are.
Now, do your residents, do they pay to be there?
The residents, if they're able, they do pay towards their care there. It really depends on their income. What they pay is determined by how much income they have. There is what's called the cost of care. That's the limit. So obviously, if your income's above that limit, you wouldn't pay beyond that. It's kind of a complicated formula on what they pay. If you have no income, then you pay nothing.
So to each, if we were to come down to visit the veteran's home in Hastings, do each of them have their own room?
They do not. For the most part, the Hastings Veterans Home was a state hospital, and in the late 1970, it was converted over to a Minnesota Veterans Home. It is a large campus of about 130 acres with numerous buildings, but the buildings are mostly solid cement. They're very difficult to change. They are mostly set up for dual-use rooms, so there are two veterans to a room. The other part about that is most of the rooms do not have bathrooms. The bathrooms are in the hallways.
Down the hallway.
That okay. is correct.
So it's a little bit like going back in the military.
Yes, it is, Tom.
I assume you have a kitchen then and a dining room?
We do. We have a kitchen area and a large dining area. We also have a couple of resident kitchens for their use as well.
So they can make their own meals, some of them.
That is correct.
Now you're on a big acreage. What else is there?
It's mostly wooded. It's along the Vermilion River. It's on the east edge of Hastings, and it's a beautiful location.
So there's some walking paths?
There's a number of walking paths. There are an extensive biking path that also hooks to the city and county's bike paths as well. We also have gazebos in some of the wooded areas. We have a small putting green. We have a lot of activities-oriented things. Horseshoe pits, tennis, that kind of stuff also associated with the campus.
So if your veterans are able, there's a lot to do.
There absolutely is.
And it's nice that they can get outside in the short summer up here.
We encourage it as much as possible, Tom.
Well, the Minnesota Veterans Home in Hastings certainly sounds like a nice place for our veterans to visit if they need some help.
Yeah, I'm very proud to be a member of the group down there.
Well, I'd like to fill that place up for you. If we've got some veterans that are interested, how do they contact you?
They can contact us via the website, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and just click on Veterans Homes, and then they can click on Hastings. They can also contact 651-539-2401.
Now, we've just got about a minute left, Andrew. Your typical resident, what age, who would they be? Why would they think about moving to the Minnesota Veterans Home in Hastings?
Right. The average age of a veteran at the Minnesota Veterans Home is about 52 years old. Typically, the reason we get the veteran is because they are struggling with some issue in their life. And that may be some mental illness issue, PTSD, a TBI, a traumatic brain injury, that type of thing. Or they're struggling with alcohol and or drug addiction. About 70% of the veterans there have what's called dual diagnosis. In that situation, they have some of both, some mental illness and some addiction issues. They may have strained relationships with family. They may have legal problems, those types of things. The Hastings Veterans Home is an opportunity for them to kind of put their life back together and the time and space to do that.
So you have some counselors available and some people available to help with whatever those issues might be.
We absolutely do. Social workers, psychologists, psychiatry. We have a number of therapeutic resources there.
Andrew, it sounds like the Minnesota Veterans Home in Hastings is a beautiful facility, and you found yourself a pretty nice position, didn't you?
Yes, Tom, I did.
Well, keep up the good work down there, and thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Andrew Burnside, administrator of the Minnesota Veterans Home in Hastings. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In this segment, we're going to talk about how the Minnesota National Guard and First Army work together in order to get all of our soldiers ready for deployments. First Army mobilizes, trains, deploys, and demobilizes all Army National Guard and U.S. Army Reserve forces throughout the continental United States. And here to talk about that today is a senior enlisted advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, and First Army's Command Sergeant Major Sam Young. Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here again.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Sergeant Major Wortham, we've got a special guest here, the Command Sergeant Major of First Army. And as I said, First Army does all of the final training when you get ready for deployment. Can you just run us quickly, if you've got 1,000 soldiers deploying somewhere for a year, you train a lot at Camp Ripley. But then how does that unfold, and what's First Army's job in that?
Well, I don't want to speak for Command Sergeant Major Young, but I'll tell you that we do a lot of our own training. Of course, like you mentioned, up at Camp Ripley, or maybe it's Fort McCoy or something. We try to keep local, of course. But the training then is validated and certified, and that tells the big Army that we're ready to move out and accomplish that mission that we're set forth to do.
And Sergeant Major Young, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, by the way. Can you tell us how long have you been in the military?
I've been in the military 27 years, sir.
27 years, and you recently took over as the Command Sergeant Major of First Army. That's got to be an honor.
Oh, yes, sir. It's been 1 year this month.
Is that? Can you explain that job to us? How big a job is that, Sergeant Major?
It's a huge, huge position, sir. We have 18 brigades spread across the United States. And our job is to partner with, assist, advise, and help train the reserve component to reach Department of Army readiness. And so I have 18 brigades executing exercises throughout the year across the United States. And my piece of the operation is I travel around and visit the exercises and make sure that we're getting after the commander's readiness. It's in line with Department of Army readiness, and just make sure that everybody's doing good training that makes a soldier sweat.
And ready for whatever mission you're sending them off to do.
Oh, yes, sir.
Sergeant Major, you must have a list of scheduled or deployments that the Army's thinking about for the next year or two, and where those people are coming from, where those soldiers are coming from, and then where are they going, what's the mission, and how do we train them up?
Yes, sir. And the COCOMs, wherever they're deploying, the combatant commander puts out a list of what he requires of that unit, and then on top of that goes on top of the basic skills for that theater of operation.
Now, how does the training work for like the Minnesota National Guard or other National Guard units? I know here in Minnesota we've got a tremendous facility, Camp Ripley, up in the middle of the state, 53,000 acres, and lots of opportunity to train just about anything. Do the other states have those type of facilities? I know the Minnesota National Guard does as much training as possible right here. And then they finish their training with you. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I'm glad you asked that, sir, because that goes into what I would like to share, which is now the big push across the Army is the Army Total Force Policy. And under Army Total Force Policy, First Army is the executor and responsible to partner with and train the reserve component. And so what we're getting after now is we're getting after what we call pre-mobilization training. And a good example of that is we were just involved with the division warfighter from the 34th Division, which was actually at Leavenworth, but First Army was the OCTs for that operation. We're currently planning with 1st Brigade for their gunnery and their culminating training event that will be held sometime in the spring after the harsh winter in Minnesota is gone. So they'll be able to, and that will be at Camp Ripley, but we will come to Camp Ripley to execute that training.
Sergeant Major, did you see any snow when you got off the plane today?
No, sir, I did not. I'm using the words of the brigade, say they were going to wait till after the harsh winter before they did the gunnery, sir.
Sergeant Major Wurzum, do you remember a harsh winter? I don't remember any of those, do you?
As long as we don't get a repeat of last year, I think they'll be okay.
But didn't we have some people in from Norway so they could train here? But that's another story. Let's get back to Sergeant Major Young. We do have one of the best facilities in the United States, as I understand it, Sergeant Major, up in Camp Ripley. And from the interviews we've done in the last 4 years, it seems like it's a real advantage to be able to have our soldiers train closer to home so they're not away from their families any longer than necessary.
Yes, sir. That is exactly correct. That is why we will be coming to Camp Ripley instead of, you know, pushing the brigade somewhere else. First Army OCTs will come to Camp Ripley to do the training.
And that'll help everybody stay closer to home as long as possible and then go on their deployments.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant Major, have you been up to Camp Ripley yet?
I have not, sir. It's on the schedule for Saturdays.
So this weekend you're going to go up and take a tour, and did I hear you're going to be giving a speech of some kind?
I will be talking to the senior enlisted non-commissioned officers across the state. So it's not only Army but also Air Guard as well.
So is this a change where First Army is going to come to Camp Ripley? That's something new?
Well, it's not exactly brand new, sir. It's happened in the past in very small elements when they requested someone to come, but not at this magnitude.
So you're planning on expanding that and taking guard units from surrounding states and pulling them into Camp Ripley and doing as much training up there as you can?
Well, we can only advise, sir. We can't force units to come to Camp Ripley.
Well, I've been up there, Sergeant Major. I think you're going to enjoy it.
Yes, sir.
So, can you just tell our listeners once again, I know that a couple of years ago we sent the 2,700 soldiers from the 1st Brigade Combat Team over to Kuwait, and they did a lot of training up at Camp Ripley, and then they went over to Camp McCoy in Wisconsin, I think finished that off the last 30 days over there with 1st Army, I believe, and then off they went on their deployment. Is that the normal way that works?
Yes, sir. Those 2,700 soldiers went linked up with I have a brigade at Fort McCoy that is permanently there. And so they went and linked up with that brigade, and then that brigade validated their training. We were required to validate training for Forces Command before they went across the water. And we've done a lot of that over the last 12 years. And that's, why, according to Army Total Force Policy, we're getting ahead of the boom, for lack of a better term, which means we're getting into pre-mobilization training and not post-mobilization training. So we're trying to maintain a readiness level across the board with all reserve component units, so we won't have to do... In the future, we won't have to do those post-mobilization training exercises. We will do a little bit, but they'll maintain a level of readiness where they'll be prepared to deploy.
We're speaking with Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham from the Minnesota National Guard and Command Sergeant Major Sam Young from First Army on Minnesota Military Radio. Sergeant Major Young, Minnesota National Guard has had a lot of deployments since 9/11/2001, and from my interviews over the last 4 years, it sounds like their readiness status is superb. How do they rate against the National Guard units from the rest of the country? I'm sure they're all good, sir, but...
Well, sir, I would tell you, that's a tough question for me to answer. I will give you my personal opinion. Sam Young's opinion is that they're at the top of the list as far as a highly trained and ready division from what I've experienced and from what I've seen. You know, I can't speak upon the Army and say this is the best division in the Army National Guard, but it is one of the best in my eyes, sir.
Well, that's good to hear, Sergeant Major. Can you tell us a little bit now, there's been some force restructuring, some things happening, and of course we're facing sequestrations coming up, and I've heard the concept of one Army, and how does that all work these days? Has that changed recently?
It hasn't changed, sir. There's just more of a focus on it, and that's what I referred to earlier, Army Total Force Policy. Underneath Army Total Force Policy, we will integrate reserve component and active component. Now, I know you're thinking we've already been integrated over the last 12, 13, 14 years, and you're exactly correct. We have been integrated, but we weren't integrated in pre-mobilization training. We weren't doing multi-component training exercises until it came time to deploy. And once they were deployed, we threw guard and reserve and active components together in combat. Now, they were very successful, but what we're getting after now is we're getting after a total readiness. So we're going to put every culminating training event will be multi-component. So every exercise is done, either reserve or guard or AC, will have another component along with them to do the training.
So this is going to be more or less continuous training so that they're ahead of the curve?
Yes, sir.
Well, that sounds like a great change and an opportunity for First Army to get closer to the guard units and the reserve units and an opportunity for you to make sure that everybody's on the same page.
Oh, yes, sir. Not only that, but it's also an opportunity for us to work as a team before we ever get to the position to the Super Bowl, as I like to call it.
Sergeant Major Young, we've just got about a minute left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
I would tell all the listeners out there it's an exciting time for the Army and the Army Guard working together along with the Reserve, and it's an exciting time to be part of it. I know we're downsizing and we're all cutting back, but what we're going to have is a more agile, leaner, ready, trained force.
Sergeant Major Young, thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio. Sergeant Major Wortham, thanks for bringing the Command Sergeant Major from First Army in to meet us. It's been enlightening to spend a little time with him, have lunch, and learn about the relationship between the Minnesota National Guard and First Army.
Well, it's my pleasure. I'm glad I was able to work out, and we're just very fortunate that he had the flexibility in his schedule to come in and support some events that we've got going on this weekend within the Minnesota National Guard. So we appreciate that and obviously the opportunity to come onto the radio program, Tom.
Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today. That was Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham from the Minnesota National Guard and Command Sergeant Major Sam Young from First Army on Minnesota Military Radio. We have one announcement today. The Minnesota Warriors ice hockey team will be hosting their third annual Veterans Day game against the NHL alumni on November 9th at 5:30 p.m. at the Veterans Memorial Arena in Richfield. For more details or to order tickets, go to mnwarriors.com or check it out on our Facebook page, as Sergeant Ben will post that as well. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Luke Heikkila and Staff Sergeant Dylan Jennings, Andrew Burnside, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham from the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Sam Young, First Army, Commissioner Larry Shelado, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we celebrate 4 years of Minnesota Military Radio with a look behind the scenes with our team. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at minnesotamilitaryradio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.